But if you're worried, send your kids to JMU. Mm-hmm. Ben, what's your spin?
Well, on that note, Madison, James Madison, we are the Dukes of JMU.
Hello, beautiful humans. I'm Tymy Castle.
And I'm Benjamin Mead.
And you're listening to Just a Minute. Just a Minute is an educational podcast where we break down justice topics in 30 minutes or less. Today's topic, campus homicides. Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us.
Hello. Hello, everybody.
Hello, Ben.
Hey there.
There was a dramatic pause there, right?
Right.
Can you believe that our very first episode was released on March 7, 2023?
No, I can't believe that. It's unbelievable that we've been at this for a little over two years.
Right, and we have 64, I guess this is 64 episodes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We still don't have the most episodes at JMU. There was a podcast, I think it's, I can't remember the name of it, mm-hmm. but they had over 100 before it. Oh. They stopped recording.
Well, oh, they've stopped?
Yes.
Oh, well, we'll catch them.
We're going to catch them.
We'll catch them in no time, and then we will hold the record.
We will. So that episode, that first episode, mm-hmm. was an introduction to criminology, and we discussed the mass murder of 4 University of Idaho students in off-campus housing in November 2022. Mm-hmm. Do you recall why we introduced those in that episode?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it was a kind of an introduction to criminology episode, and we were trying to explain what criminology is. And one particular interesting aspect of that case is that the murderer was a criminology student.
Well, alleged. He has not been convicted.
Oh. Alleged for legal protective purposes, but he did it.
The trial hasn't happened yet. No. We don't know for sure.
Well, in our last episode, we talked about legal guilt versus factual guilt.
Right.
So he's not legally guilty yet.
But as you mentioned, mm-hmm. the interesting fact there was that the person who is awaiting trial, mm-hmm. which is supposed to happen in August, mm-hmm. was a first-year PhD student in criminology at Washington State University.
Yeah.
So at a preliminary hearing on May 15th, the judge in this case stated that jury selection will begin on July 30th with an August 11th trial start date with opening statements, hopefully. Mm. However, Kohberger's attorneys requested a trial delay, citing in part intense publicity around the case generated by a recent NBC Dateline special they claim was prejudicial to their client because it contained apparent prosecution leaks in violation of a non-dissemination order.
I'm going to have to check that episode out then. I didn't know.
I have watched it.
I'm going to have to watch it. Yeah.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of information mm-hmm. that has not come out. Yeah. That was a part of that episode. Mm-hmm. And it's Keith Morse.
Oh my gosh, he's my favorite. Yeah. I was just getting ready to ask you, is it Keith?
Yes,
I'm
Keith.
Definitely watching it now. He's my man.
He's getting really old though, mm-hmm. so maybe he should retire mm-hmm. soon. So anyway.
No, please don't. Keep going, Keith.
Yes. Well, if I die tragically, mm-hmm. And I was a wonderful person and someone kills me and my death is suspicious, make sure the Dateline episode features Keith.
Yes.
But that needs to happen mm-hmm. before he dies. So anyway, in a callback to our very first episode, I thought that we would discuss campus homicides today.
Yeah, that's a good callback for our kind of like 2-year anniversary special.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So let me state first that the mass murder discussed in that episode, and mm-hmm. we're talking about the University of Ohio. We were just in Ohio. That's why it's in my head.
And both states begin and end with vowels. The first and last letters are vowels.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. But this was 4 students who were murdered in off-campus housing at the University of Idaho. This is very rare. Most campus homicides or student homicides in off-campus housing do not look like this.
Yeah.
So, and then let me state second that we'll be discussing a couple of the cases that occurred on or near UVA involving college students. If you're a local listener with familiarity about any of these cases, consider this a content warning for those who may have some connection to the cases.
Right.
So we are very lucky here at JMU because this is not something that we have or have had to deal with, as our community is a safe little enclave in the friendly city in a gorgeous part of the Shenandoah Valley. Yeah. Come visit and send your kids to JMU.
Yeah, go Duke, school spirit, yay, JMU. It's totally the best.
Yes. So in fact, as is the case with most homicides, the offender and victim have a personal relationship. We'll talk about a few exceptions to that, but first let's give a more general picture of campus homicides. So I'm going to go through a couple of statistics regarding homicide, specifically campus homicide and not campus crime. Anytime there's a crime on campus, universities are required to report it per the Clery Act. Do you want to tell or remind listeners about this? I can't remember if we've discussed it before.
I don't think so, because I had to look up how to pronounce Jean Clery.
Yes.
But anyway, the Jean Clery Act, Jean Clery Campus Safety Act, is a consumer protection law that was passed in 1990. And it requires all colleges and universities who receive federal funding to share information about crime on campus, as well as their efforts to improve campus safety and to inform the public of crime in and around campus. And this information is usually made publicly accessible through university's annual security report or something like that.
Yes, and I will say that if anyone wants to go and look at JMU's website, there's a whole website devoted to the Clery Act, and they give a lot of information, including the annual security report. But it's extensive, and they also offer like resources for hazing and, you know, all of the things like the training that you had to go through. All of that is listed there. So the JMU website for the Clery Act is really good.
Nice.
So they have recently added hazing reporting to this per the Stop Campus Hazing Act, which was signed into law on December 23rd, 2024, very recent. And it amends the Jean Clery Disclosure of Campus Security Policy and Campus Crime Statistics Act. Those are always really long. And renames the Clery Act officially as the Jean Clery Campus Safety Act.
Good job.
Yeah, cut that right down. It requires campuses to compile and disclose statistics on hazing incidents reported and to publish information related to hazing incidents in a newly established campus hazing transparency reports. And those are also on the JMU website. But back to the Clery Act and its origin. In April 1986, Jean Clery was sexually assaulted and murdered in her dorm room at Lehigh University in Pennsylvania. After her murder, the Clerys, the parents, learned there had been 38 violent crimes, including rapes, robberies, and assaults, on the Lehigh campus in the 3 years before Jean's death.
Well, it was the late 1980s, and we just talked about that recently.
We did. Call back to another episode. At that time, there was no requirement for universities to publish statistics about campus crimes. Jean's parents, Connie and Howard Clery, argued that had they known of the crimes at Lehigh, you know, maybe she wouldn't have attended the university. So they lobbied Congress to pass legislation, and the Student Right to Know and Campus Security Act was signed into law in 1990 to help ensure transparency in campus crime reporting and safety policies. In 1998, the law was renamed in Jean's honor to the very long one that we just mentioned that we're not going to state again. Because we're just going to call it the Clery Act.
Yeah.
So here's a general overview of what you can see on this website. You can actually play with the data and break it down by institution, type of crime, et cetera. But if we look at 2023, the number of reported criminal offenses was 41,801, and that's based on 5,673 institutions with 10,307 campuses.
So that's about 4,000 crimes per campus on average.
Right.
In 2023.
But the average here would probably be skewed, right? Towards campuses where there's a lot of crime versus campuses there's no crime.
Bigger campuses would certainly have more crimes for sure.
So this includes everything from arson to burglary to rape, with motor vehicle theft being the top reported crime in 2023.
Interesting.
So for homicide, and I looked at on campus only, there were 27 murder / non-negligent manslaughter cases reported and 2 negligent manslaughter cases. And we've talked about those distinctions before. If I add non-campus and public property, those numbers increased to 66 for murder and non-negligent manslaughter and 13 for negligent manslaughter. So the non-campus category is going to include your off-campus housing.
Yeah.
So the highest year for on-campus homicide was 2007, but this included the VTech shooting on campus. So, you know, one issue here is that if you have one mass murder and there are a lot of victims, that's going to shoot your figures up. That's going to drive your figures. So how much did you or do you know about the November 13th, 2022 mass shooting at UVA?
Nothing. I don't remember.
Yes.
I don't remember it.
Well, you know, because the press was all about something else. So if you recognize the date, it's because that was the same day of the Idaho murders. So the Idaho murders occurred sometime that morning, about 4-ish is the time frame. And the UVA shooting occurred when a bus carrying a class that had traveled to DC to see a play arrived back on campus that night. So a couple of statistics here on campus homicides are that 29% of them are escalating disputes that turn fatal, and 40% of all campus homicides occur outdoors, like in parking lots, which it's still a bit unclear on if there was a dispute in this case, so let me give you some details.
Okay.
The professor of a course on African-American playwrights chartered a bus to take the class to D.C. to see a play about Emmett Till. The perpetrator, Christopher Darnell Jones, was not a part of the class, which included four UVA football players, four of which were shot that night and three killed. But he had been invited to join the trip as he was taking a social justice class taught by the same professor.
Okay, so I do vaguely remember something involving football players being killed.
Okay, that's
what you're referring to.
So on the way back, Jones rode in the back of the bus and did not engage in most of the discussion with others. Some survivors said that they heard him yell, "You guys are always messing with me," before he opened fire on the bus that was now in the parking garage on campus. It appeared to be targeted toward the football players, with him shooting one in the head while he was sleeping.
Oh, my gosh.
The victims were Devin Chandler, Lavelle Davis Jr., and Deshaun Perry, and there were two others wounded. As I said, one of them is a football player, and then there was somebody just caught kind of in the crossfire. Another interesting fact is that even though the professor yelled at everyone to evacuate, several students stayed behind to help with CPR and also went back to help once they realized that people were kind of like frozen in fear and not evacuating. So some background on the offender. He had a very successful high school career. He was student of the year twice in a row, member of the National Honor Society, president of the National Technical Honor Society, Key Club, president, Jobs for Virginia Grads Program. Very successful high school career. Obviously, he got into UVA, right? He was a former walk-on UVA football player for one season in 2018, so he had an experience with the football players.
I don't know what walk-on means.
Actually, I don't either. I think it's you're not recruited for that. So he had a football career in high school, right? Was accepted to UVA. And as a walk-on means he wasn't specifically recruited for the football team.
Gotcha.
So he has spent one season with football players, but he never played in a game.
Gotcha.
He had been investigated as the subject, not the perpetrator, but the subject of an alleged on-campus hazing incident in the past. There were reports of bullying at UVA. And he was under an investigation in September for possibly having a gun on campus. Investigators had also learned of an incident involving a concealed weapon violation outside Charlottesville in February 2021. And he was also found to previously have a reckless driving and hit-and-run charge.
So there were some warning signs, eh?
Yes, it was clear that he had some trouble at UVA. He was experiencing bullying. He reported that to multiple people. He reported the hazing incident. Jones's father stated that he was in disbelief that his son was a suspected shooter at the time, but he alleged that his son had recently told him that people were picking, quote, picking on him, but he hadn't spoken to his son much in about a month. So obvious signs of crisis, right? It's not clear if there was some kind of dispute or disagreement before the outing, but reports are that they didn't talk to him at all during the outing. But he did plead guilty, so nothing more came out about the motive. So we discussed this at the end of my mass and serial murder class this past semester, because one of the comprehensive threat assessment team models was developed by a UVA professor. And the TAT, the threat assessment team, had referred the perpetrator for disciplinary charges that were pending due to having a gun on campus. So he would have received that letter before the outing. So if almost 30% of campus homicides involve escalating conflict, based on your knowledge as a criminologist, do you want to take a guess on another significant factor?
Yeah, I mean, my first gut guess would be alcohol, but that would probably be included under like escalating conflict. Like you get drunk and you have conflict and it escalates. So then I thought about like dating violence, like
ding, ding, ding.
College students and yes. romance on campus and stalking and that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right. So a quarter of all campus homicides are related to domestic violence, primarily involving students. There have been, you know, episodes of where an employee is involved in a domestic violence incident.
Yeah.
This happened to our friend Mary Pierce. That happened on when she was on campus. But you,
wait, so she wasn't the victim of the domestic violence.
No, there was another situation where somebody had come on campus to shoot his wife, and that happened.
Gotcha.
While she was on campus. But you,
I just wanted to make sure
Mary
was okay.
Yeah. So UVA also had a case in 2010 where Yardley Love was killed by her ex-boyfriend. Both of them were UVA lacrosse players, and there was a history in this relationship of stalking, threats, and assault, which is why she ended up breaking up with him. At the time of that she was killed, he had broken into her apartment and beat her to death. So this occurred in off-campus housing, but would still be included in the Clery Act reporting because, as we mentioned, it includes non-campus and public spaces.
Yeah.
Yardley's family created the One Love Foundation to educate young people about the difference between healthy and unhealthy relationships, to seek help before it leads to violence. And as we discussed in a previous episode, there are other factors as part of coercive control that increase risk without violence being present.
Right.
So in these cases, the offenders and victims were all students. But Charlottesville also had a serial killer who pled guilty for murdering UVA student Hannah Graham in 2014 after abducting her from the downtown mall. The perpetrator was identified by surveillance camera and was not a student, but he had been investigated previously for sexual assault at two universities, Liberty and Christopher Newport Universities, but left before anything happened with those cases. And they connected him via DNA to a cold case homicide from 2009 in Charlottesville, where VTech student Morgan Harrington was visiting to attend a Metallica concert when she disappeared, and her remains were discovered 3 months later, also in rural Albemarle County.
Wow. And when was this? When did he get caught?
After the 2014 murder of Hannah Graham.
Oh, okay. So this was...
So what happened is that,
a long time ago,
yes, Hannah Graham's remains were found about 5 miles from where Morgan Harrington, her remains were found. And so obviously they were able to use DNA to link those cases once they found the perpetrator.
Got you.
So Harrisonburg also had a serial killer who my students got to sit in on a part of the trial this past semester. So maybe we'll discuss that in a future episode.
Yeah, the shopping cart killer.
Yes.
I think we've mentioned that a couple of times. But like, it sounds like it's time for Criminal Minds to come to Shenandoah Valley or Central VA. Like serial killing is rare, but I didn't realize there was another one.
Yes. So I was going to also discuss the Idaho murders a bit more before realizing this is already getting too long. So maybe we'll wait until more info comes out during the trial.
Good idea.
So even with these cases, it's important to summarize and stress that campus homicide is rare.
Yeah.
When it does happen, it can be related to an escalating conflict or domestic violence. And given what we know about how, why, and where it occurs, there are some strategies for prevention that are important to note.
Yeah, I mean, I think you mentioned the Idaho murders, and
right.
just this off the top of my head, but like that's really rare, this idea of like a stranger breaking in and, you know, like killing strangers or serial killers, as you said. Like most of these things, and we've talked about this before, like, you know, most crime occurs between people who know each other. Stranger
right.
victimization is relatively rare.
Yes, even and with the weapon of choice, right, being a knife, that's even more rare for that to happen. So in addition to educational workshops on healthy relationships, campuses also need domestic violence support on campus.
For
you know,
sure.
So for example, what do you do if you want to cut ties with an unhealthy partner, but you live on or go to a campus where you might be forced to interact with them or risk seeing them?
Yeah.
So enhanced conflict resolution skills workshops are used and work with younger children in preventing conflict and de-escalating conflict. And we need more of this at the campus level. The Gandhi Center used to offer these on a regular basis, but it was an opt-in kind of situation.
Yeah.
So Also, environmental security has been addressed, given that most murders occur outdoors and in parking lots. Mm-hmm. And this makes sense. So what are some of the better environmental design features for crime prevention, Ben?
Well, I would say lights, camera, action. But lights and cameras are definitely good points. But we criminologists actually have an acronym for this, CEPTED, Crime Prevention Through Environmental Design.
Yes.
And, you know, again, that's basically like designing the environment to try to prevent crime. And you want to have like well-lit areas with lots of visibility where people can see what's going on, and either kind of like implied or actual surveillance. So visibility does this, like if passersby can see what's going on, but also certainly like maybe cameras or those like campus safety booths with police buttons can also do this. And limiting access is also an important aspect of CEPTED, but the problem with campus crime is that if both parties are students, right, they both have access. I mean, there may be the thing where, like, you have to have your, you know, card to get into, like, your dorm, and only people who live there can be that. But if, yes, we're talking about, like, public parking lots and, sure, you know, other places on campus, like, both parties have access there.
Yeah, and we've added things like apps, right? LiveSafe. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that, you know, kind of doesn't work in the moment when, mm-hmm, is what you're trying to prevent, mm-hmm, this stuff from happening. You're not reacting really to something.
What does LiveSafe do? I just remember, was that what we had to use to like do our COVID check-in, like, oh, before we came to,
yes,
class?
Yes, although I believe it was called, mm-hmm, something else.
Yeah. But what does LiveSafe do?
What does LiveSafe do?
It gives you alerts if there's anything happening on campus that is, like, suspicious or a potential danger situation. Like, there was a, mm-hmm, gas situation at an off-campus, mm-hmm, housing facility.
The smell of gas, mm-hmm, yes. Yeah,
mm-hmm, alert, like, we have evacuated this area, please stay, mm-hmm, away, traffic may be impacted. I think it was, oh, around Maine. But
I need to download that then.
I know. That would, mm-hmm, be Madison giving us an assist. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thanks, Madison.
Thank you. Because we don't pay attention to these things, but maybe we should download, yeah, LiveSafe. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and then lastly, our mental health resources, which have expanded a lot on campuses, both during and after COVID. Mm-hmm. Most campus homicide offenders displayed suicidal behavior prior to the murder. We know they're showing signs of crisis. Everyone, yeah, who works at a university should know what resources are available to help students, how to assist, how to refer, etc. But the reality is that we as faculty do not see these students as much as others in the community might. I mean, right, I've got them like 75, mm-hmm, minutes twice a week, mm-hmm, or 50 minutes three times a week in a class where there are 60 other, mm-hmm, students.
Yeah.
So in the interest of time, I'm going to put a pin in it there.
Well, I guess that means you don't have anything else then. I usually ask that. Don't need to,
yes,
today, do I?
No, I have all nothing, right, else.
Well, that means it's our minute to spin it then, where we both give our takeaway from the show today. So Tommy, in just a minute, what's your spin?
My spin is that campuses are pretty safe environments overall, and homicide is rare. But if you're worried, send your kids to JMU. Mm-hmm. Ben, what's your spin?
Well, on that note, Madison, James Madison, we are the Dukes of JMU. Go! Did you know the fight song?
I've heard it a, mm-hmm, couple of times, but not enough to memorize,
yeah,
it.
Yeah. So. Well, I didn't either. I just looked it up. But oh, I didn't. Okay. I didn't know it all. And I probably got the tune a little bit wrong. But it is like really fast.
Well,
and
they
jazzy.
Do it at graduation. Which you're probably not paying attention.
Well, I've not been to one since before COVID, since it was on the quad, so who knows. But, you know, I don't want to joke too much or be trivial about,
right,
this, because campus violence and shooting is rare, but it could still happen anywhere, and we talked, yes, about some instances that are very close to home. So let's remember the victims of campus violence, let's pay attention to the steps that we can take to reduce it, and let's hope something terrible doesn't happen again or here.
We are a community-driven podcast sponsored by the Gandhi Center and produced by JMU Libraries. Check out our website, linked in show notes, to see how you can support our educational programming.